This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. It's episode 288. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com. And my co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site. While my Cards Wire site is the part of the USA Today family of sites, one of the wire sites for the NFL. And we have this show is after it appears the Cardinals did what they've done all season, is after getting us kind of excited of what's upcoming, they bring us back down to earth a little bit, and they lose to the Seattle Seahawks 28-21 last Thursday. You know, since it was on a Thursday, everyone's had a chance to stew over it, and it almost feels like last week's game is kind of in the rearview mirror, and we're more thinking about what's coming up with the Patriots game in Week 12. But there's a number of things to talk about. Obviously, we want to talk about what went wrong. What was the biggest reason or biggest reasons for the loss? What that game does to their chances in the division and the playoffs? We'll talk about injuries. We'll look at the players who need to step up the most over their final six games, and look ahead to the New England Patriots and the weekend matchup on the road on this holiday weekend. Seth, let's go ahead and get started with what went wrong in the game. Of all the things that happened, what were, if you had to pinpoint where the things went most wrong, what would it be for you?
I think the first thing was the offensive line play was really poor this week. This was probably their worst performance as a group this season. And it was a bit, you know, surprising when you look at how bad the Seahawks have been. But then you kind of remember that they've made two big, you know, changes on their defensive front. They signed Snack Harrison, what was it, about 4 weeks ago, and then they just recently traded for Carlos Dunlap, who's still got some juice in him. And so I think those, you know, additions really helped out the Seahawks defensive line. And what that does, and something we talked about in the first game quite a bit, was you know, Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright are probably the two best linebackers in the NFL in terms of, you know, just that group. And when you all of a sudden have better play on the defensive line, it frees up the linebackers to make plays, and we saw that quite a bit in the run game. And then the second thing, and I mean, I'm assuming you'll agree with this, is that, man, that that defensive line that's been just devastated by injuries is just bad right now. They really have no ability to stop the run, and that was kind of the difference in this game, is when you're being dominated on both sides of the line, you're going to really struggle to win games. And all of that being said, the Cardinals had a chance to tie the game late. Like, that's still baffling to me to go back and think about that.
Yeah, well, and ultimately, for me, it came down, like, of all the things that went wrong at the game, it came down to two plays. And I wrote about this the morning after the game, is two plays cost them 6 points. And the Cardinals were in a position at that point, they would have either been able to tie the score or go for the win in that scenario with a field goal by, you know, they failed to get the ball in the end zone. But the two plays would be the one, the ridiculous penalty by Dre Kirkpatrick, where you get the third down stop, and he wasn't even part of the play. He wasn't part of the play. DK Metcalf obviously started yapping. Dre reacts and he gets an unsportsmanlike conduct when he takes a swipe at him. He's lucky he didn't get kicked out of the game. That extended the drive. Two plays later, they're in the end zone. They would have. That was a guaranteed 4-point penalty there, because at worst, they would have kicked a field goal and gotten it. And with those 4 points off the board, instead of the Cardinals having to go down for a game-tying touchdown, they have a game-tying field goal, and Zane Gonzalez comes in for what I believe would have been a 45-yarder to force overtime. So that, number one, if there's anything of all the other things that didn't go quite right for the Cardinals, is the fact that that stupid, selfish mistake that Drake Kirkpatrick made, and then J.R. Sweezy's holding in the end zone. How in the world do you get beat that badly immediately? Because, like, the second the ball was snapped, he had Collier's jersey from the moment the ball was snapped, and he was beat off the jump. Now, we've talked about, and especially in our group chats, that J.R. Sweezy has felt like the weak spot on that offensive line all year, and his return has noticed it, that some of the ineffectiveness in some parts of that, and I don't think we're going to see a change to Justin Murray to the starting lineup. That's just kind of how the Cardinals go with that. I'm going to guess that Kugler is a big fan of Sweets. They do love Justin Murray, but I think they're going to roll with him for the rest of the year. But that play there cost them another 2 points, and 6 points there instead of going down and being down seven. They're only down one with a couple minutes left. They go down. They're in position for that game-winning field goal. Ultimately, those two plays cost them the game. Now, you look across the board, you know, the penalties overall, 10 penalties for 115 yards. If you look, that's basically a touchdown. If you look at it that way, that's a touchdown's worth of yards lost. And then they just couldn't. They were unable to do what they do best, and that's establish a run game to balance things out. And it's interesting because the Cardinals don't always dominate with the run game early, but because they fell behind and were playing from behind and didn't get things at least effective early, they were unable to build on that later in the game. They just couldn't do it. And they were forced out of the game. What it looked like, it's honestly, I'm a little bit worried about in terms of the Cardinals' chance for the division. We'll talk about this in a little bit, but that game that Seattle won was a classic Seattle win because they did it with strong play on defense and a great running game. Russell Wilson was effective, but it's not like he played out of his mind. So they ran the ball really well, which they didn't do against the Cardinals, which they actually did. They did run the ball fairly effectively, but the way the Cardinals' offense is going, teams have not been able to keep up running the ball. And that defensive line looks stout again with those additions. You know, Dunlap and Harrison, who have some juice left, like you said. And it added that it shored up, which was by far the weakest part of their defense, and it overcame the fact that they were down two starting cornerbacks, which, you know, Cardinals should have been able to take advantage of that more, but because they were getting pressure, they weren't able to do it. And, you know, I think the offensive line had a bad night because they just couldn't recover from it in the 4 days, ultimately.
Yeah, and, you know, there's just some issues that they've got to find a way to overcome because they're not going to be able to correct them. And, you know, you talked about the injuries and the inability, you know, to run the football and you know, J.R. Sweezy having a bad game and things of that nature. But in the end, this is more than any season we've ever seen. This is a kind of a season of attrition and like finding a way to overcome these injuries or these, you know, unfortunate COVID results. And the Cardinals had done a good job of that, but there's two games where you can see that those didn't work out. And that's, you know, that's Carolina and that's Seattle. I mean, we can talk about Miami, but in the end, they're, you know, they probably should have won that game. And
But at the same time, to have Tua pick them apart there was in part because they were playing with, you know,
No Byron Murphy, then Drake, KP
got hurt, and so you're playing with Jace Whitaker and a guy they cut the next day.
But at the same time, they kind of stole one the next week.
It's true, in
the Hail Mary. So, you know, a lot of times those things even themselves out. And you know, when things like that happen, you just, I mean, you really do just have to find a way to overcome them. And it's been, you know, it's been tough this year. And I think, you know, and I know we're going to talk about this later, but I think the biggest thing of the night ended up kind of being what was going on with Kyler's shoulder. And because there were throws that he missed that weren't misses because, you know, he was inaccurate or anything like that. It was just, he just didn't have enough juice in his arm. And yet, again, they were still in a position to at least tie the game up. And that tells me, you know, there's no moral victories or anything like this in the NFL, but that tells me quite a bit about where they are in their kind of development. Because, you know, again, if we step back, 6-4 is where we both kind of hope they would be. I don't know if either of us really expected it, but we both hoped that, you know, they'd be at around 6-4 right now. And that's, you know, that's where they're at. And, you know, it's tough to be a fan and go, oh, you know, they're ahead of where we expected it, but they really are at this point.
It's true. Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk of the world. Let's build on that and talk about where they stand now with their chances to win the division and make the playoffs. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And Seth started talking about something. The Cardinals are 6-4. The problem is, if we entered this season, we both thought 8-9, max 10 wins this year. With everything going well, maybe 11 or 12. But that would be absolutely everything. But this season, it's been a little bit of a roller coaster because they build it up and you're like, hold on, could they do this? Boom, then no. No, they can't. And then they build it up like, can they do this? Nope. No, they can't. And that's where we're at. Literally last week, we talked about, could they be on their way to a 12? Like, if they beat Seattle, they could be in a position to, they'd be in, if they beat Seattle and take one game out of the Rams, they're in control of this division. A 12-win season is definitely reasonable. And they, but then we said, well, it probably happens. And this is exactly what happened. So after they go 2-0, they lose those two games. And you're like, oh, never mind. Then they get to 5-2. And you're like, oh, and then they lose one. Then they win the Hail Mary game, and then you're like, okay, hype's back up. Time to see what they got against the Seahawks. Can they sweep the series? Nope. No, they can't. And so this is just big. They are almost. It's a season where they are almost. And so they build us up to think, maybe they're a really good team. And then they play a game where they're like, oh, they're not quite there. Now, what does that mean for the division? I think that loss, though, obviously, they still have a chance. They still have 6 games left. And honestly, 4 of them should be pretty, the 4 of them are definitely games they should win. And they need to win at least one of those Rams games. That said, they win 5 games. That's 11 wins. The problem is, I think they took themselves out of the driver's seat out in the division. They went from being first place to third place. Because one thing I'm kind of afraid of now, we'll have to wait and see what happens with Seattle. But if they've gotten right up front, that is a scary team. Because that offense is tremendous. And if their defense is not horrific, that's a team to be not to be trifled with.
Yeah, and they are, you know, in this developmental progression, it's interesting to kind of look at things. And, you know, I always try to stack teams against one another and then kind of go through and be like, okay, just on paper, obviously, who would you take? And so you and I were talking actually today about this, and you look at the fact that they are a half a game behind the Tampa Bay Buccaneers right now, who have arguably the greatest quarterback of all time. They have a very good offensive line. I would guesstimate that probably 3 to 4 of the guys starting right now for the Bucs, most people would take over, you know, the Cardinals players. They have probably a better stable of running backs. I don't know if I would take Ronald Jones straight up over Kenyon Drake, but I think Jones and Fournette are probably better than Drake and Edmonds. And then their receiving core is, without a doubt,
oh my gosh, tremendous.
Better.
They have three number one receivers essentially on their team.
Right. And then the Cardinals have the best receiver in DeAndre Hopkins, but, you know, and then their tight ends are, again, kind of unquestionably better. O.J. Howard got hurt, but they still have Gronk and Cameron Brate, who are both very, very good. And they're 7-4. They're statistically inferior to the Cardinals in, you know, many of the counting statistics. I know their DVOA and things of that nature had been a little better than the Cardinals. And then you flip it around, they have a better defense, and I don't think anybody, just from a talent perspective, they're far superior. And they're 7-4. They're a half game ahead of the Cardinals in the playoff hunt for what is, you know, we've talked about, is probably, outside of the one seed, the best seed to have in the first round, the 5 seed, and getting to play. Well, I guess they're down to the 6 seed now, but getting to play the NFC East winning team. And you look at that, and I get that it's the first year for Arians and Tom Brady together and things of that nature, but if you were talking at the beginning of the year that the Cardinals would be jostling with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for a playoff position, I don't think anybody would have believed you, one. But two, when you talk about that and then you look at, as Jess said, kind of the missing pieces just from a talent perspective the Cardinals have right now, they're in a great position. And so when you look at where they're at compared to the Seahawks or compared to the Rams, they're not just on paper right now as talented. And that was because they were literally one of the worst teams in NFL history just 2 seasons ago. They were the worst offense in the modern NFL history. I think the worst one since what, the 80s. So just to see them, and again, we're not trying to sugarcoat it. There were a lot of negatives coming out of this game, unquestionably. But the fact that they're in the games that they're in, I mean, they've not been blown out of any game. Clearly, the Carolina game was their worst loss of the season, but they're not getting blown out in any games. And then when you think about the fact that they are still building this roster, they're still kind of constructing this team, and there's still massive talent gaps that have to be filled in, and they're still doing this, and they have the number one offense in yards and first downs, their top 7 in scoring offense. You know, they're coming back down to earth defensively, especially in scoring defense. And that was something that you and I told, you know, kind of said this was going to happen. You know, and the second half of the season has been brutal defensively, but I think that coincides with the fact that they've been missing guys like Jordan Phillips, Zach Allen, you know, Lecky Fotu got hurt, Rashard Lawrence was re-injured. You know, Devin Kennard has struggled to get back on the field. They've dealt with, and now, you know, they lose Corey Peters for the season. They've just dealt with so many injuries that they were good enough when they were healthy. They're just not good enough to overcome that kind of, that loss of talent. However, again, they were in this game and they were doing it with, you know, a maybe 80% Kyler Murray. I think that just goes to show that they're really close to kind of putting it all together. And it's easy to lament the missed opportunities because there are some. But it's also really easy to forget how far they've already come, where they're at in that kind of trajectory, and understand that, you know, they're probably not going to win the division. I would guesstimate they'd have to sweep the Rams to do so. I would guess that they'd have to finish 11-5. They could probably only lose one more game the rest of the season. And by the way, they're completely possible. You know, they completely have the ability to do that. I just don't see them beating the Rams twice and then only losing one game of the rest. If anything, I could see them losing to the Rams twice and winning the other four games. Yeah. That would be, you know, make complete sense. But, you know, I think the Rams are really in the driver's seat right now. You know, they continue, you know, they got rid of Todd Gurley. And I mean, their running game's obviously not as dynamic as it was 2 years ago when they went to the Super Bowl, but it is still a very effective running game and kind of showing the way that, hey, like, you don't have to have a number one running back. You can do it with, you know, guys like Chase Edmonds and you know, maybe an Eno Benjamin. And obviously we're not talking about maybe those guys, but you can do it with lesser guys, and we'll see kind of how that grows, because I think, and this is an off-season conversation, but I think the biggest issue that this team has had and continues to have is the fact that they've spent so much capital on the inside linebacker position since Steve Keim took over. I mean, you look at it from Kevin Minter to obviously the Darrell Washington contract to, you know, Deion Buchanan, Hassan Reddick, Jordan Hicks contract, Devondre Campbell contract, drafting Isaiah Simmons. And it's still not a strength of the team. And in the same time that he's invested all the first and second round picks and big free agent contracts, he's kind of let important position groups fall to the wayside, and specifically the defensive line and the cornerback position that we kind of hit on. Like, and so when you're continually having to patch the cornerback and defensive line position, and then you're kind of taking swings and misses at the linebacker position, it makes it tough. But you know, we talked about this too. Part of the reason Seattle's so good, because they have a quarterback and a coach that can cover for that. And I'm not ready to put the Cardinals on that level yet, because I think that would be unfair and unrealistic to Kyler and Cliff. But I think that they are showing that they're trending that way.
And if we look at the kind of the schedule for both teams, well, all the teams moving forward, obviously the Cardinals are a game behind both Seattle and the Rams, which puts them in a tough situation because, well, all three teams have pretty weak schedules the rest of the way. The Cardinals have the toughest one because they've got two games against the Rams. The Seahawks only have two division games left, and the Cardinals have three. The Rams have four. Now, I think the Cardinals, at least when you're talking about making the playoffs, they're in the driver's seat. They are a full game ahead of the Bears. And they're the only other team in the conference who is 500. And so we're in a nice situation for the Cardinals in terms of if they finish 9-7, they probably make the playoffs. Now, that's not, you know, they squeak in with the number 7 seed, which they benefit from because they've expanded the playoffs. But you look at the teams behind them, that's the Bears at 5-5, and we know that the Bears, with their strong start, were a bit of a fraud the way they started because their offense is atrocious. The Vikings, you can't count on, and the Lions are 4-6, and the 49ers are 4-6. And so you've got those three teams that are full two games behind the Cardinals, and none of them you can trust. The 49ers, who's going to be without Jimmy Garoppolo and George Kittle and roughly half their roster. The Lions, who can't seem to get out of their own way, and the Vikings, who just started so poorly this year. You think that would, if they go 9-7, if they split, that means the Bears have to go 4-2 just to catch them, and the Vikings and 49ers and Lions have to go 5-1 the rest of the way, which you don't necessarily think. Now, the division, that's really hard because they're a game behind two teams who have a pretty easy schedule. Let's kind of go through the breakdown of what the Rams have left this year. So they are 7-3. They play the 49ers this next week. They have the Cardinals twice. They play the Patriots, they play the Jets, and they play the Seahawks one more time. Now, the Cardinals would need to at least, for them to catch the Rams, they would need to split the games against the Rams, and honestly, they need the Seahawks to beat. They need the Seahawks to beat the Rams to then... And if the Cardinals go 5-1 the rest of the way and the Rams go 4-2, they both finish 11-5. And the Cardinals, I believe, if I look at that schedule, I think they even still, the Rams might be in control of that because if they lose the Cardinals would win the division over the Rams because the Rams would have gone 3-3 in the division, and the Cardinals go 4-2. But they need the Seahawks to beat them, and that's the tricky part, because that gives the Seahawks a division win. And so, you look at the Seahawks schedule, and you need them to lose two games. They have the Eagles, the Giants, the Jets, the Washington football team, the Rams one more time, and then the 49ers. They might not lose again. They might lose once. Like they should beat the Eagles. The Giants are no good. Like they have the NFC East left on their schedule. A 49ers team in week 17. So basically, you have to have the Seahawks lose twice as well just to catch them. And they are, we have to look at the standings, they're already 1-1 in the division. They'd have to lose to the 49ers. They'd have to lose to the 49ers. Well, wait, where is that? Never mind. That would be the ideal scenario. They lose two games. They lose one game to somebody, it doesn't matter who, and then they lose, other than the Rams, and then they lose to the 49ers, and then the Cardinals take over. If they do that, then you're going to have to go to conference record, and I think the Seahawks and Cardinals, if the Cardinals can catch the Seahawks, and they end up, that might go down to strength of schedule, looking at where they're at, because the Seahawks are a game better against the conference than the Cardinals. The Rams are 7-1 against the NFC, and so you need to get that division tiebreak ahead of them. That's why they got to lose one of the Cardinals and lose to the Seahawks. Goodness. Jeez. That's going to be tough. But I think the good thing is that the Cardinals they are very much in control of their 7 seed, or at least a wild card spot, which is great. But I think that the division takes some work because they lost that game to Seattle. They need certain specific things to happen, and that which is going to make that really difficult. So coming out next on the Rise Up Sierra podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to move on to the next section, and there's some injury concerns we got going on. So let's talk about that. That's coming out next on Rise Up Sierra. We're back on the Rise Up Sierra podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Cardinals have a few injuries going on. Let's talk about those, Seth. What's the injury that bothers you the most right now?
You know, we talked today a little bit about it. Obviously, this isn't a new injury, but Jordan Phillips, I'm worried why they signed all of these practice squad guys that that play, you know, that are big, kind of in the same mold as Jordan Phillips and Lucky Fotu. It makes me wonder if there's going to be any news on one of them about not coming back, because they signed three guys over 320 pounds. Obviously, they lost Corey Peters, but we would have thought the signing of Pecco, would kind of fill that void. And instead, obviously you want some youth in there, and maybe, you know, but I expect to hear something. I think the other one is, I mean, obviously Murray's the biggest one, but it sounds like he's going to play.
Yeah, that's with Kyler Murray's injury. I mean, the report came out the very next day that he wasn't going to miss any time. So the Cardinals, coming off of the mini-bye, they have an extra day of practice. And on Tuesday, people were a little bit worried because, oh, he was rehabbing on the side. That's, you know, when you have an injury like that, it makes sense. You have an extra day of practice. You sit him an extra day. You give Strebler some reps at with the first team, whatever reps you're doing on that bonus day. And you expect Kyler will be full by the end of the week. Just for precautionary purposes, like they said it was. And like we saw Carson Palmer, there was a week he did not take a single rep of practice, and he still played. And so, now granted, Carson Palmer had been in the league for, you know, decade and a half, over a decade. And so he's a guy that he'd been in the offense for a while. And so there's one thing for that, but I'm not terribly worried about Murray, other than how does it affect him? Obviously, he's tough enough to go out and play, but what about the effectiveness? When he went and played on his hamstring in Week 17 last year, you could tell the way he played, he had it on his mind. And so he was more in the pocket. He was more disciplined in that way. It's going to be interesting to see if that affects – if that's on his mind when he throws the ball. The only concern I have, honestly, I'm more concerned about what's happening at safety, because they could be very thin again at safety this week because they don't have anyone on the practice squad. Now, Deontay Thompson, he just was put on the COVID list. So they are good at the starting lineup, Buddha and Banjo, if that's going to be the, because Jalen Thompson looked like injured his ankle pretty bad again, re-aggravated it. But on Tuesday, no one reported that he wasn't participating. So either it was an oversight, or maybe he will be fine this week, or at least will be limited, and he'll be available at least. Because Charles Washington as well did not practice. He missed the game last week with a groin injury. And so they only have the five safeties on the roll. Actually, now it's only four safeties on the roster since Thompson placed on the COVID list. And if one of them or two of them are unable to go, you don't have anyone on the roster to bring up, because they couldn't even sign anyone at this point and have them play on Sunday.
Yeah, and so it'll be interesting to see what's going on with Jalen, as you said. I think that's kind of the key, and you know, scouring the Twitter and the press releases and things like that. Like, there's no information. So, and I don't think they can not list him on Tuesdays, right? Or I guess it's Tuesday, so they don't have to.
List. No one had to do anything. So the official injury report comes out on Wednesday, so we'll see what his participation is. And unless it was, it might have been like, I can't say that that many reporters just have an oversight. So it sounds like he's going to be at least limited if he was out there practicing on Tuesday.
So, I mean, we'll see what happens because that's a key position, and we've seen that before. You know, we've talked about it before, how they seem to be playing with fire at the safety position. But, you know, at the same time, you've had a plethora of injuries all over the defense and at this point. So we'll kind of see what happens. And I mean, I guess the defense could potentially struggle more if the safety position is hurting, but I think it would only really struggle that badly if Buda Baker can't play.
Right. If you got Buda and Banjo, you're okay. You're okay.
Yeah.
The issue is if one of them gets banged up during the game and you don't have anyone to come in.
Right. And so then, yeah, I mean, you're in trouble. So, you know, we'll see what happens. It's been an interesting year. And like I said, attrition has been kind of the key. You know, and the Cardinals, it's not that they stood pat. Obviously, they went out and got Marcus Golden and Jonathan Joseph, but they didn't seem to bring in the same kind of impact players that like a Seattle did. But again, I think that goes back to readjusting your expectations and understanding that this is probably not a Super Bowl winning team. So how much do you want to throw in terms of draft capital and salary cap and rollover and things like that at the 2020 season, knowing that you still have 2 years of Kyler control to continue kind of to build this, and you've already got DeAndre Hopkins in, you know, locked up, DJ Humphrey's locked up. You've got key positions and players locked up. But yeah, the safety position, obviously the defensive line, and I mean, I'm concerned about the corners, but that's because the ones they have are not any good.
But it's not an injury thing. If Dre, that's the thing. Dre's not bad, but he's not good. He used to be good. He's not bad, and then he make that knucklehead mistake. Byron's been good sometimes, but not good recently. Pat's still good, but doesn't seem to be great anymore. Well, he's not consistently great, and so there are some plays you're like, what? So there's other those aren't injury concerns though. Honestly, the Pecco thing, we've been talking about Pecco, has it been for like a year? We totally thought he was a perfect fit. 2 years. We thought he was a perfect fit for the Cardinals, both 2019 and 2020 in terms of free agency. Because he gives you that true nose tackle, and, you know, he seemed to follow Vance Joseph because he was in Cincy as a D-backs coach when Pecco was there. Then when Vance Joseph went and became a head coach, the 2 years that Vance was head coach, Pecco was playing for the Broncos. We thought he was a perfect fit. Now they finally get him. And, you know, whatever he's got left, he's not really going to give you anything. He is a standard 3-4 run-stopping nose tackle, and he's a good to have on that defense. He's a very good addition. But I think, like what you were saying about, maybe it's not necessarily about replacing Phillips as it's replacing Peters on third down, on passing downs.
Well, and to be fair, I mean, they desperately need somebody that can hold up in the run game. And they get, you know, they're going to get Zach Allen back, maybe not this week, but he's just been kind of placed on that designated to return. You know, so they're getting healthy-ish, but, you know, like you said, it's interesting how they've, I guess, neglected's probably not the best word, but they've, you know, they're taking a really big chance at the safety position for, what, the third or fourth time this season?
Yeah. But then again, I mean, you have guys that you like Jalen, they really like. Like, the way they talk about Jalen, Vance Joseph talks about Jalen like he's going to be Buddha. He's just not there yet. They like DT, but, you know, COVID list. Banjo's been pretty solid. And it's really much pretty much anyone. If you get down to safety 4 and 5, it's kind of a lost cause anyway. It's the way they constructed, because they made concerted additions on the defensive line and based on the front seven. They chose to go with continuity in the defensive backfield after how they played late last season. And every move that they've made since then of addition has also been about familiarity. So you bring in Jonathan Joseph. He was coached. Well, we go back to Dre Kirkpatrick, who's coached by Vance Joseph. So he knows it, the system. You bring in Jonathan Joseph. He's coached by Vance Joseph. You go bring in Domantas Pecco. He was coached by Vance Joseph. Marcus Golden wasn't coached by Mark, but he's familiar with the Cardinals and plays a 3-4. So there you go again. So Brenson Buckner, you've got people. The players they've been bringing in defensively have been about continuity more than about necessarily they're talented players, but they're not necessarily the best players out there, because they valued more the continuity part of the defense as they were building on last year than they did about, you know, just adding wholesale talent. Now, they did that up front. They did that with Jordan Phillips. They did that with Devon Kennard. They did that with Devondre Campbell. They did that with Isaiah Simmons. Oh, my gosh. And we didn't even mention the fact, holy cow, Isaiah Simmons, what a game. That doesn't apply to what we're doing talking right now, but fantastic.
Yeah, and they just continue to improve at, you know, at these younger guys are continuing to improve, and I think that's kind of what we were hoping for more than anything else, right? Like, the growth of the young guys and doing it while winning games. And that's something that's rare in the NFL, let's be honest. Like, you don't oftentimes see that growth of a Jalen Thompson and those, you know,
Byron Murphy
and Isaiah Simmons while you're winning games. And I know it's only a one game improvement thus far, but I mean, I think we can realistically expect, I would say 3-3 as like the worst case scenario the rest of the way.
Yeah, that's with disappointing losses too, mind you.
Yeah, and so if they ended up at 9-7, one, I think everybody would be like, you know, they didn't finish the season like we had hoped. But two, if you took a step back and looked at it, you would find that there were a lot of outside circumstances that they couldn't control, and not just COVID, but we're talking injuries and things that you know, play into that. And to see that kind of growth from those players while knowing that, you know, they do still lack talent at key positions. And especially, I mean, we haven't really talked about it much lately, but the reality is they've done all of this without Chandler Jones, which is kind of amazing to think about when they really have no other pass rusher. I mean, Hassan Reddick's got 5 sacks. I don't think he's had one in the last, what, 3 games?
Correct.
Marcus Golden is a nice player, but he continually hurts the team with his inability to kind of rush from a controlled pocket. I mean, it really only hurts the team against Russell Wilson, but he's kind of the king of that. And so to see this team getting that production from Isaiah Simmons and that growth this week, I think was I think it continues to be important, even if the outcome is not exactly what we'd hoped for.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about over the final six games, who do they need to step up the most? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. The Cardinals have another six games to go with playoff aspirations, with an outside shot at the division, as we discussed in a previous segment. But let's talk about who they need to step up. Obviously, they've got injuries that they've got to get healed from, but if we're looking ahead for the rest of the season, we've gotten great. Like, say what you want about Kenyon Drake this season. He's on pace for over 1,100 yards. Kyler Murray's on pace for over 5,000 total yards between passing and rushing. Chase Edmonds was at least on pace for a 1,000 yard from scrimmage year. DeAndre Hopkins on pace for a gazillion yards receiving. And so they're getting a lot of production. But who do they need to step up in the final six games? If you had to pick three players they need, who'd be your number one?
You know, it's funny because despite all that, I still think they need Kyler to play at a level that we saw in the Buffalo game. If we just take out, actually in the Buffalo and Miami game, that kind of back-to-back games were what you'd hope to see. And then, I mean, the sad thing is he wasn't even bad against Seattle, but he just didn't make the same plays. Obviously, they were trying to help him not take shots running the football. I think you need to continue to see that from Kyler playing at a top, you know, seven quarterback level in the NFL. Defensively, I think you have to continue to see the growth of Isaiah Simmons. Specifically, I would say right now, inside the tackle box more than anything else. I know that's going to take time, but with the injuries along the defensive line, the apparent rapid aging of Jordan Hicks to the point where he's become lumbering, and the fact that teams are, especially the teams that the Cardinals are getting ready to play, are going to run the football right at them. He's going to have to continue to have the growth he's had, but he's going to have to take that into that kind of tackle box area and make plays inside. And finally, and I think this is the biggest one, and you kind of talked about it a little bit earlier, I think Patrick Peterson has got to step up and play at least at a cornerback one level consistently. I'm not expecting him to shut out Stephon Diggs, but he can't get beat up by Stephon Diggs.
And he can't give up a play like that on a critical moment. Like, that's not something that happens to great cornerbacks.
Right. I think Peterson, more than anybody else, has to transform into an at least serviceable top cornerback option, because we talked about that win over Seattle, you know, a couple weeks ago, and, you know, the conversation of how good, you know, Tyler Lockett was, and Tyler Lockett ate their lunch all game, but we didn't talk about how great Patrick was on DK Metcalf. And that was kind of that, you know, an opposite this week. You know, Metcalf had 3 for 46, but he had the touchdown. And the touchdown was a long one.
And he made Pat look bad two or three times. Now, the conversation a little bit different against the Seattle game. If that holding penalty doesn't take back that game-winning touchdown in overtime. But,
right.
And that's the thing, is that people forgot that in the second half, Pat pretty much erased Metcalf, but Pat looked bad on three. It wasn't like a couple of plays. Like the Lockett game in Seattle, Pat was right there and Lockett made plays. DK
right.
made Pat look bad.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is like, they're so limited at cornerback anyways right now that if Patrick's playing at a low level like he has been the last two games, and really the last three games, Devontae Parker kind of ate him up too in that Dolphins game. But, you know, mainly Stephon Diggs and DK Metcalf. Now, he gets a little reprieve this week. I am interested who they're going to put on former Arizona Cardinal great Damier Byrd, who's been playing well.
Yeah, he's coming off the biggest game of his career, too.
Yeah, and because those are historically the players that Patrick struggles with are the smaller, fast receivers. But, you know, their top guys are Damier Byrd and Jacoby Myers. N'Keal Harry really hasn't stepped up yet, and he's the type of guy that Patrick typically shuts out of a game when he's right, because, you know, he's not an overly quick player. So Patrick can usually out-athlete them. And so, you know, that's not the concern. Obviously, there's going to be other concerns, but the concern becomes the Rams game where, you know, he's going to have to either line up against Cooper or
Robert
Woods. Thank you. And to be fair, their third wide receiver, Josh Reynolds, is having a really nice year at 448 yards. I think that's that'd be second on the Cardinals roster in terms of receivers. I'd just be right under Christian Kirk's. So, I mean, you know, that's what the concern is going to be heading into these next couple of games is how does Patrick play?
For me, number one is Pat. I'm going to say I like that you said Kyler because but they don't need him necessarily to step up. They need to maintain his level of play. So for me, I'm not going to put him in what I need to see from Kyler. He needs to step up. He just needs to continue what he's been doing. Number one on my list is Patrick because of the expectations that are being placed on him and his role in the defense. You don't have Chandler. And he is for Vance Joseph's scheme to work best, you've got to have guys who can cover, and you've got to have guys who can get to the quarterback. And they already don't have the guys getting to the quarterback on their own. And so you need guys on the outside to cover. Dre Kirkpatrick, I mean, I don't know how much you can expect from him. He is older and was coming off of not a great year last year. Patrick, though, is declared, you know, he believes he is as good as he should be. And he's the one that makes things right on defense. And so they need him to step up on. The second thing is also defensively, and they need one of those outside rushers, either Marcus Golden or Hassan Reddick, to do more. They have to get disruption. And more importantly, I know some people don't like the sack stat, but the sack, depending on the analytics, the pressures are more important than sacks. But as you've mentioned on previous shows over the years, sacks are a finished play. You're not going to throw in it. You're not going to throw a completion with a sack because you can be pressured and be under duress and still make plays. So they need them finishing more often than they have. They need one of those guys to step up. And then I'm going to say offensively, it's got to be Christian Kirk. They're getting play from DeAndre Hopkins. As much as we want to rely on Larry Fitzgerald, he's not dynamic. I mean, he's reliable. And partly, and this was an observation made by a couple of people on Twitter, is that throwing to Fitz when Christian has the opportunity to make bigger plays is something that's happening. And you need Christian to be the number two. If Hopkins is your alpha, you need Christian to be that number two making plays as well.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I mean, he's had a nice season, but it's been really kind of boom or bust with him, right? Like, he's either producing massive plays or he's not really doing much, and the Cardinals just flat out can't afford that. They need him to be that kind of five catch, 55-yard type of guy every once in a while. He doesn't always have to be a guy that goes for four
five.
For
right. It doesn't have to be 5/123, but what I want to see for him, I want to see at least two dynamic plays per game to help make him be impactful.
Yeah, and so that's, you know, that's the big thing. And I, you know, it's interesting because we've often said and speculated that he would have a good rapport with Kyler, and there seems at times where they're really on the same page, but then there's times where it seems like they don't even they're not even in the same offense. And so I don't know what that is, but you know, it's definitely something that they need to figure out.
Coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. We'll move on to the previewing and predictions for the New England Patriots this weekend. That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about those Patriots who lost to the Houston freaking Texans last week. And when you see a loss like that, you're saying if the Texans can beat the Patriots, the Cardinals must beat the Patriots. And I'm of the opinion that for what the Cardinals need to do, yes, they need to beat the Patriots because the Patriots are an inferior team this year. But they are still a dangerous team. Cam Newton still has it. He's not playing at the same level, but the guy threw for over 365 yards against the Texans. Now, granted, Deshaun Watson tore apart that New England secondary. What can we expect against this New England team this weekend?
I honestly don't know. I've watched New England a couple times this season, and you don't seem to know what you're going to get. The team that had the Seahawks on the ropes hasn't really shown up in the recent weeks. That being said, there's still a team that is disciplined. There's still a team that's, you know, multiple on offense where they run the ball and they're able to throw the ball. They still use Cam as a battering ram. Obviously, that they didn't do that beforehand, but, you know, that's something that they still do. And so it'll be interesting to see how they attack the Cardinals and how healthy Kyler is in this game to make sure that he is able to produce that kind of dynamic player that they need him to be. Because, you know, as you said, they really, really, I mean, struggled, was putting it mildly, against Deshaun Watson. And while I don't think, you know, it's fair to place Kyler on Deshaun's level at this point, they are similar in terms of ability, and Kyler can put pressure on a defense in an even greater way because of how dynamic he is running the ball. So I think in the end, you have to see this team, you know, continue to take that kind of next step. You're going to need Pecco's going to have to kind of come in, and it's really bad to expect a 15-year NFL veteran to come in and be such an important cog in a 6-4 team, but they're going to need a lot from him in this game, or somebody to step up into a role of, you know, that's similar to that and give this team something against the Patriots running attack. Damian Harris has been good this season. You know, obviously you feel awful for Rex Burkhead, but it is something that is going to assist the Cardinals this week, not having to worry about Burkhead because he's a very dynamic playmaker and he kind of gives them a different look. So when it's Harris, you know, if it's Harrison, they typically are running the football. If it's James White, they're typically going to throw the ball. So you know, that Burkhead injury is going to be a big deal. It'll be interesting also to see if Isaiah Wynn plays their starting left tackle, who's a very good left tackle in this league, but has been maligned by injuries in his young career. You know, if he's able, or if he's out, the Cardinals defense, even kind of duct tape together, should be able to get after Cam Newton quite a bit and, you know, really cause havoc on this New England offense all game. That is, you know, they've got some talent, but I wouldn't say they're dynamic in really too many ways.
And that's, it's hard to kind of look at what to expect the Patriots because they've been so hit or miss. They've had some really good offensive games. They are believed to be a good defensive team, but then there are some defense, there are some games when their defense is non-existent, and then there's games where you wonder how they're able to play good defense with all the losses that they've taken. All the losses they've taken, whether it be departures or COVID opt-outs and whatnot, and the fact that they had major cap issues entering the offseason, having to do all this and still be relevant-ish this late in the season. So they're 4-6. The AFC's kind of weird, but, you know, no one would be surprised to see them make a little mini run late in the year, especially as Cam Newton gets more comfortable offensively, as they know how to use him. And this is a game that's really hard. Like, deep down, I think the Cardinals should be able to move the ball very well against them. They don't have, they're not super stout up front this year. They have good secondary play, but Gilmore has been in and out of the lineup. J.C. Jackson is an interesting case because the analytics people love him. But, you know, then the Patriots leave him off the Pro Bowl roster. It's like it's almost like they're Malcolm Butlering him in a way. It's what almost what it feels like.
Yeah, and right now the Cardinals are favored on the road in New England, 2.5-point favorites. It's a tough year to decide who the Patriots are and what you're going to get from them. And quite frankly, I don't know. And that's what makes it so hard.
Well, and for you look at this game and you're talking about matchups, you know, you pretty much in my mind, I don't look at the Patriots matchups, like how they match up against the Cardinals, and really, and I think the Cardinals match up favorably in most of them. And this, the one thing you have to consider is, does Cam become a backbreaker for them with the run game?
Yeah, and that's what the question is, and. Quite frankly, the thing that worries me the most this game is the Cardinals' run defense. Can they contain and get off the field enough in order to get their dynamic offense on the field and can give them a chance to get started?
Right. It all comes like, if they're deficient in run defense, the way to do that is to get an early lead and be good enough early to take them out of the running game. And
that's just something that they haven't done this year.
They haven't. It's been rough for them because they fall behind. They had the slow starts, and they've been able to, up until that Seattle game, they've been able to, like I've been using that term, flip the script. Because they've been playing early in games with deficits, having to come back, and then they take a lead. And even against Miami, they did that. They just faltered at the end. Buffalo, they had the lead, faltered, and then got the miraculous end. But with Seattle, they just never could get back over the hump. And the Patriots, I think, are a team that will be able to do that with. I think they're a team where they can overcome a slow start, but by golly, they need to stop doing that, because that's going to be really hard to do against the Rams.
Yeah, exactly. And so they're, you know, they're in a weird spot. It's time to, you know, kind of put a game together from start to finish. You don't want to get behind in this game, like you said. You don't want to have to be chasing in this game. And that was my concern last week. The odd thing was that both defenses played a little bit better than we expected. So, you know, I didn't think the Cardinals would win last week on that short week, but I didn't expect it to be, you know, a sub 50 point total. This week, if the Cardinals are going to win the game, I don't think it'll be a blowout, but I think it again will be a sub 50 point game for the total, but it's going to be something like 28 to 17 the Cardinals win, where they're able to get out in front and control the game and maybe give up a cheap one late that makes it seem a little closer than it is.
And I think that I think they'll be able to crack that 30 mark. I think they're going to go 30 to 23 or 31-23. It'll hit the over in that game. I think the over is at 48.5, which is low for Cardinals games these days. But I think that's kind of the route that's going to go. They will pull ahead, but you know, I think the defense will falter a little bit late. And I hope in this case that they're in control rather than having to rally and then take control, because, like, more than anything, they've got the schedule the rest of the way that they can afford to do that, but there's two games where they can't, and that's against the Rams, and I don't want them to get into that sort of habit. Well, they're already in that habit. I'd like them to break themselves of that habit, especially against teams that they should beat. At minimum, if you are keeping pace with the Rams, but with the strength they have up front, you can't afford to do that. But I think with the Patriots, I think that they'll take care of business. But because they've responded this year every time that they've had disappointment, and I anticipate the same thing. But you'd never know. East Coast, the end of November, coming off of, it's the holiday weekend. It's a wacko time of year, so. But I do think, I'm picking 30-23, I think is what I'm going to say. They still hit the over in that game. They win by a full score, and it isn't necessarily, they're not the cardiac cards, let's say.
Yeah, let's hope for that. It would be nice to have to come off the holiday weekend and enjoy a early game on the East Coast and not have to worry about it, you know, and then be able to relax and coast it back into the work week.
Absolutely. And with that, we will end this edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. So this episode drops Wednesday, as you probably heard it. Hopefully, we will be able to talk about the Cardinals being 7-4. Our show next week will likely drop a day early, as we have to adjust schedules with things that are happening in our personal lives. But we'll be back again next week. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Definitely go to cardswire.com, go to revengethebirds.com. You will get your fill of Cardinals content, and we'll be back again next week. Thanks for listening, as always. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms, so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.